Hello team, and welcome to episode 458 of the Simply Fit podcast. In today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Justine Bassani. Justine is an alcohol-free vegan bartender and personal trainer. Yes, I did say that all correctly. After years of trying different professions and paths, Justine discovered that it was the world of nutrition and fitness that was for her. She's since invested herself into all things health and fitness, but whilst doing this, has kept her job at the bar. I personally found this fascinating as I hear from so many people that they struggle to maintain their health and fitness because they work in nightlife where the environment is not synonymous with a healthy lifestyle whatsoever. However, Justine is a primary example of someone who shows that it is possible, and if she can, then you can too. In this episode, you can expect to learn why Justine continues to work at the bar whilst being a personal trainer and nutrition coach, how the conversations with her customers led to her writing a book about nutrition, along with a ton of nutritional lessons that are going to help you on your health and fitness journey. So without further ado, Justine Bassani. Justine Bassani, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Nice to meet you.
I am super, super happy to have you here. And I'm very excited to get into our conversation today. I love to speak about health and fitness, and I know that you do as well, and know that you have taken a lot of paths to get here too. So I'm looking forward to diving in deep to our topic and your journey as well. So to get started with, can you give the listeners a bit of context about who you are and what it is that you do?
Yep. So I am from Connecticut. I work as a bartender 4 days a week in a small town called New Canaan, where I've built an amazing community of regulars. On the other side of things, I am a personal trainer and nutrition coach the other 3 days of the week. And my background is in fine art and writing. So I have just taken everything together and recently launched my new book, Eating Lessons.
Amazing. And it sounds like you've had quite a journey to get here. So maybe take me 15, 20 years back and talk to me about what things that you did to end up on this path to where you are today.
Well, my grandparents are off the boat from Italy, and my mom, they do have some very traditional habits. So when my mom was growing up, they had their own farm and they would kill the chickens and rabbits for food. And my mom actually went vegetarian at 7. So when I was growing up, she had nutrition books all over the house. I was always reading about it, and I actually went vegan at 14. There was a lot of pushback, and that there wasn't as much like availability of things. So I just, you know, kept reading. I kept it to myself, and I did what I could on a daily basis to just not get harassed by people who ate meat. And then, you know, I continued in art school, continued my diet, continued my habits. And my family always said to me, why don't you become a nutrition coach? And I was like, well, because I went to school for art, I actually wanted to be a fashion designer. I did work for The Gap for a little while designing, but corporate wasn't my thing. And I came back to Connecticut from the city, and I was back in the restaurant, and then I pursued acting. And I became a professional stand-in for 4 years, which was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of people and really explore acting. I am a Renaissance girl. My friends always say, what doesn't she do? Because, you know, if it's an art, I want to know what it's like. I want to know what it's about. But now, you know, I've had to really cultivate a career out of the side job that got me through all of these different paths. And I did that about 10 years ago when we had just this uprising in Connecticut of mixology competitions. And all the guys were in it. And I was like, I want to be in it. I understand art. I can make a pretty drink. So I started entering these contests as the only girl, and I didn't win them all, but I did, you know, really make a name for myself. And I was in magazines, and, you know, I got away from that really clean lifestyle and into this bartender lifestyle that was great and it was exciting. But after a while, you know, I was drinking more and I was eating worse. I was gaining weight, that all my friends were doing it. It was like, okay, well, is this what we do as bartenders? And I just got very low. I wasn't as happy. It was all superficial. Like, I remember one day I was like, you know, I had like a few hours before work and I was like, well, what do I do? I hadn't been to the gym in a long time. And I texted one of my friends who was a bartender and I was like, what do you do? Like, everybody's like bartends and we drink all night and then we have all this time in the day. What are you doing all day? And he was like, I go to the gym. And I was like, what gym? And he told me what gym, the Edge. And I was like, okay. And that day I joined the gym. I got a trainer and I basically told my best friend that she was the only person I was going to talk to for like 3 months. And I said, I am going to make some big changes. You know, I don't need to like bring the bar home with me. I can be a bartender and I can be like the core of my being, like all of the healthy stuff that people used to make fun of me for, you know, I wanted it back. And so I started this journey and I quit drinking and I got certified maybe 8 months after I quit drinking because I wanted to just know everything there was to know. I want to give the gym as much as I gave alcohol, you know, as many drinks as I learned how to make. I want to do the other side. But keeping that clientele, that bar setting, everybody wanted to know what I was learning. Everybody wanted to ask me questions about their diet. And what happened was it was COVID and I couldn't train anyone. We had, you know, the people that were sitting at the bar were 3 feet apart. We had plexiglass and I would literally just was doing like casual sessions, coaching sessions at the bar. And after the first year of that, I was like, every single night I'm answering the same questions. Everybody has the same like wrong information about fasting, about keto, about, you know, just what's good for you, what's not good for you, compensating for their alcohol calories by not eating. And I was watching them eat while we're talking about it. And I was like, you know what? I just need to answer all these questions in one place because I'm wasting my breath. Half of these people are drinking. You know, everyone was interested, but, you know, I wanted a place for the people that really were interested to go back to. And so it took me 2 years to write this and, you know, I wanted to get it out before the new year, but that's the abridged version of why this book is here.
Yeah, it's a fascinating journey. And I think you must be one of the only health and fitness coaches in the world who has done so many nutritional consultations from a bar. That is
right. Pretty
damn unique. So now it's all starting to connect. When I first read your bio, got a little insight into who you were, I was like, you know, they seem like very paradoxical and opposite career paths, right? You've got bartending, which usually isn't synonymous with the most healthiest lifestyle in the world. Then you've got someone who's a health and fitness coach, which, you know, is synonymous with one of the most healthiest lifestyles that you could ask for. But now the way that you've brought these together, and like you said, you're alcohol free, you're vegan, you're doing your health and fitness coaching, you spend a bunch of time in the gym as well. So is this something that you will continue to do? Is it a path that you want to continue traveling down in terms of balancing those two lives and kind of finding the bridge in between? Because I think this could be a really nice insight for a lot of people who are in night work, for example, you know, bartenders, people who are performers, for example, as well, who maybe just think, you know, it's impossible for me to maintain this type of lifestyle, but you're living proof of it happening. So is this something you're going to continue to and maybe try to show people a little bit more of this aspect of your life?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I would like to maybe only bartend one night or two nights a week, you know, just because it's hard to stop your project and then switch your life for 2 days. It's easier if you have consecutive, you know, 3 days in a row.
For sure.
But I think my customers would absolutely lose it if I ever left. I know that for a fact. They're really great. I can't even say in words how much, you know, every single person who comes in is so happy to see me. And I don't think I could give that up, you know, but I do want to spend more time with people. And I think that I'm now able to book online sessions, you know, and the other thing is people are all over the world who are able to do that. So you can fit that into a bartending schedule, but I want to be able to have enough to give everybody and myself. So I guess you have to find that balance for yourself.
Yeah, very true.
And take it, you know, day by day and, you know, test the limits. You can't stay too comfortable. It's scary, but, you know, there's every opportunity opens another opportunity and you have to just trust it.
Yeah, I think you're finding a nice intersection between those two at this moment in time. And I'm curious to get an insight into how does one balance that lifestyle? How do you get enough sleep? How do you keep your nutrition on point in an environment that, like I said, is not super synonymous with being healthy and fit? You're still doing it for a fair few nights per week. So talk to me about that transition. It sounded like you got into the gym and you were kind of hooked on it, but was it as simple as you made it sound initially?
I am such a schedule person for the creative, like, ADHD girl that I am. Like, I am at the gym at the same time every day until the same time. I am like clockwork. So I go to sleep at the same time basically every night, 2 o'clock. I wake up at, you know, between 9:50 and 10 o'clock every morning. I am like clockwork. I think that not drinking is, you know, a big component of that. When I drank, I, you know, could be out of commission for a whole day. And so that's why, you know, some people are like, maybe I should just cut down. I was like, no, like there's nothing, I'm not benefiting from it. So I think as long as you're really streamlining what your priorities are and you are working with your consistency, I'm all about consistency. It, like, the habits create you. Like, you know, I don't need to convince myself to go to the gym. Like, I just go. Even if I'm trying to do an errand by my gym, I just, like, drive to the gym. I'm like, I'm supposed to go to the car wash, you know? And I'm like, but I'm on the same street as the gym. I just pull into the parking lot all the time. It's funny. But, like, for me, you can't teach that. But I think the more consistent you are, I think it's 30 repetitions is a minimal amount of repetitions in order to create a habit. As long as you cognitively make yourself do something for a short amount of time, you're gonna like it. You're gonna become it. And then it's effortless. So that's what routine.
Yeah, I like that. So leaning on your strengths from the scheduling perspective, following that up with a bunch of consistency, and obviously not having something that holds you back. Like you said, if you were drinking, that might throw a bit of a spanner into the mix of what time you end up going to sleep, what time you end up getting up in the morning. And then that obviously has an entirely huge impact on all of your schedule, to be completely honest as well. So
yeah.
I like that aspect as well. So no, it's a super interesting set of circumstances to be in. And I think that you navigate it pretty damn well. So I think it's a good insight for a lot of people who work in evening jobs, night shifts, all these different types of things. And then you've got the aspect on top of it, which is the environment that isn't super, super healthy too. There's many people who maybe work security jobs, for example, where they work late into the night, but it's in a factory in the middle of nowhere. It's not in front of a bar or something along those lines. So they might have it even easier from an environmental perspective. So I'm glad that you've shown that it can be done in that setting, and it's being done very, very well by the sounds of it as well. And now I want to transition onto some of the things that you've mentioned in your books. You've obviously got a bunch of these different titles that stood out at me. And obviously as a health and fitness professional, I want to dive into some of the ones that caught my eye in particular. And one of the first ones that you put was that you believe diets are bad, or you mentioned something like why all diets are bad. So why is it that you believe that diets are bad?
When I was in high school and, you know, during the acting time, I would identify with having had an eating disorder. And a lot of it was diet driven. You know, there was starvation diets, there's, you know, very low calorie fasting diets, there was a whole craze of like slim fast diets, and me and my friends were all eating so low calorically that I was looking at every single diet. I was buying every diet book I could. I tried keto. I tried everything. I tried vegan keto, which was literally the hardest thing I think I've ever done in my life.
What did you eat on vegan keto?
My gosh, it was like raw tofu. I think like hummus was my biggest carb. I think I lasted like 3 days. But yeah, and I was not happy. But diets are bad because they're not sustainable. And 90% of diets are only working because you're taking so many food groups out that your overall calorie consumption goes down. It's not because the diet itself is working. You could be eating any combination of foods at that caloric level and be getting those results. But because the diet itself isn't something you are enjoying and it's not meeting your nutritional requirements, it's not something that you're going to be able to do for a long time. And then you're going to gain weight again. So I kind of break it down in that by why each diet has like a, you know, short term, like everybody wants to try keto. I think everyone has tried it, but it's working because you're taking out all the bread and sugar that you're eating all day. You should take that out anyway, but you should be adding greens and reds and purples and every color of food you can find. So that's what I'm trying to teach. Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you see as an alternative? Because I think the thing that makes people lean towards diets is usually the simplicity. Like you said, that you really like schedule. I think a lot of people really like instructions. They don't have enough nutritional knowledge, perhaps, to say that, okay, I know to replace the bread and sugar that I'm removing from my diet with X, Y, or Z that's going to be much better for me. And I think that, unfortunately, nutritional education is at a very, very low place for most people who have no interest in this world. And then they end up getting into a position, they're like, okay, please someone just tell me what to do. And then they take the thing that seems most popular or most, you know, restrictive in a way, because a lot of people think that restriction equals good results, right? The harder or more intensive diet it should be, usually it ends up with having some good results. That's what at least is sold to us. So what do you see the alternative as for someone who is, you know, thinking, well, I just want to really be told what to do and diets seem to fit the bill for me?
I think that eating on the go, like if you eat out a lot, if you just take those meals and you replace them with you, so everywhere I look is the new vegan cafe. Anywhere you go, there's going to be a place that you can start going to for lunch. Try, you know, just going in there. There's, you can't do wrong. There's nothing on any of these smoothie bar menus or any of these like vegan pop-ups that are coming out. And I think that that's a really great way for people who have never tried it. So they don't know what to switch to because I don't know what that is. If you walk in one of those places and you get anything on the menu, you can leave feeling guilt-free and you can start exposing yourself to a positive, nutritious habit in a time where you would normally go grab a Subway sandwich and start feeling lousy. So I think just like trying something new, like you don't have to go to the grocery store on your first day and like find every gluten-free bread or, you know, dairy-free yogurt or cheese. I will be making a list and I hope to do some grocery store walkthroughs so that I can show people my favorites. I'm friends with everybody at Whole Foods. They all know my name. So I am planning on doing that soon, but not everybody is going to see that. But day to day, just swapping out. I mean, you don't have to, it's like, think less about exclusion. Don't think about I'm replacing the bread. Think about what can I add instead. So I have a lot of talking in the book about substitutions and like, what do you really want? So my whole basis is starting to listen to what your body wants instead of just like, oh, pizza is easy, you know? Okay, well, it's easy, but like, just at stop, you know, you're important. Stop what you're doing. Think about, what do I really want? Like, you may not want, you know, it's lunchtime. Maybe you don't want a sandwich, but you're just going to get a sandwich because you usually get a sandwich and it's easy. But maybe your body like wants a fruit salad or, I don't know, something arbitrary like some type of soup. You know, like you just immediately, once you take a moment and reflect, identify what those things are. And then usually if it is an unhealthier thing, like say a basic pizza, then I break that down even further. So I'm like, okay, do I want bread? Do I want sauce? Or do I want cheese? And I kind of isolate those things. And I'm like, if I just ate the cheese, you know, I'm vegan cheese. Or if I just eat the sauce, or if do I really just want some bread? Do I really just want carbs? Did I wait too long to eat and now my body wants carbs and that's why there's fat on that and it's a lot of calories? So what can I have instead? I can have a tomato soup and I can have a rice cake and a salad, and that's going to make me feel way better than if I just ate a whole pizza. And it's going to give me all those flavor components, which is what my body is actually asking for, is the tomato sauce or the carbs, because it needs lycopene or vitamin C. So that's kind of my philosophy.
Yeah, I like that. I like the aspect of breaking things down and asking, like, what is it that you truly want? And I think this is a big thing with portion sizes as well. I've said this to many people before. It's like when you're craving a pizza, for example, you don't actually want the entirety of the pizza, or at least rarely you do. Once you have your first slice, you're like, ah, this is super satisfying, it's very enjoyable. Second one is maybe the same, but then with each slice, maybe after the third or fourth, depending on how hungry you were, it's kind of just getting worse and worse. You're not enjoying it anymore, and actually, like, the negative consequences are going up, right? You're going to feel more lethargic the next day, you're maybe going to feel a bit heavier on the scales the next day. It kind of has this like inverted graph of like, okay, my enjoyment just peaked here.
Yep.
And now it's just all downhill, and kind of the consequences weren't so bad, and then they keep traveling up. So I like that idea of just breaking it down. And
same,
like,
thing with alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's 100% true, right? Like, once you get past that second or third drink, it's like, well, what value do you then get after that? And then your decisions start getting bad, and then all, you know, then it's a bit of a mess thereafter. But I like that aspect. And that brings me on to another thing that you mentioned, which is knowing your cravings is a very, very valuable thing. So tell me a little bit more about why it's valuable to know our cravings. And to add on to what you just mentioned there, does that fall into the same bracket?
I think that it's a good way to really get yourself out of habitual emotional eating patterns. I think that, and that's why I started these shadow work journals, because I think a lot of, I'm getting off base of the question a little bit, but I think a lot of what we carry with us when we're making food choices starts when we're kids. The comfort foods develop there, the habit foods, the foods we don't tell people we eat, the foods we eat privately, or the foods we just eat when we're out. Those are all attachments. I think that when you're really ready to make changes, you need to stop looking at food for that satisfaction, for that comfort. And that's why I think it's important to identify your cravings, because you need to be honest with yourself about if you want something because you really want it, or if you want something because it's going to make you feel different than how you're feeling. And I think it's important when you are identifying yourself as eating emotionally, that could be when you're happy or sad, that could be when you're celebrating, that could be on your third slice of pizza, which I agree. I also say in the book, once the bite stops tasting as good as the first bite, that's when you're done. And it's still going to be there. You know, I like to wrap it up. If it's out, I have a habit of going back. But like, once you wrap it up, put it away, and it's away. So all cognitive stuff, all just teaching yourself the lessons that you should have learned when you were growing up. But not everybody, you know, a lot of people were just given whatever they, you know, was easy or whatever. You know, there's a lot of kids at the restaurant that chicken fingers and french fries because that their parents don't want to even try giving them vegetables. It's just chicken fingers and french fries, quesadillas. I don't see a single parent having their children eating vegetables. And me growing up, it was the other way around. I was living in a health food store. My first job was in a health food store. My mom took me to the health food store every weekend I couldn't have, you know, I wasn't on dairy. We didn't have dairy in the house. As long as I could remember, we were buying cases of rice milk because that's all there was available when I was little. And I knew that I was different when I would go over to my friends' houses. I was like, what is this food you guys have? It's like, we don't have this. My mom is making seaweed soup and brown rice again. So, no, it's true. I was like, Mom, it smells like the ocean. Why can't we be normal? But I think that I'm a really sensitive, empathetic person, and I look at every single person I meet genuinely. I'm very open, and I just feel like I can be a safe space. I had to do it for myself, you know, just acknowledge that you have to sort of start at zero and kind of work your way up. And that's why cravings is your body's core message. You can't go wrong with it. It's not, you know, like when you want raisins, you know, when I know I'm craving raisins and walnuts, it's a thing. My aunt actually makes fun of me. She's like, oh God, go to Costco. Justine's coming with the walnuts and raisins. I'm like, I know that I need some iron. I just know. And I eat all the raisins and walnuts I want. But it's just like learning to give your body an opportunity to know that there's those sources out, because your brain doesn't know the nutrition content of a piece of paper if you don't eat it. So it doesn't know that there's iron and raisins if you're eating steak every night. So just the craving, sort of like if you're craving carrot cake, instead of not having carrot cake, think, okay, what is it in the carrot cake? Oh, maybe I just do want raisins. Because like that's the way I go. Or I'll just make like a variation of a carrot cake where I'll make like a tahini based raw like cookie dough ball with fresh carrots and coconut milk and carrot, you know, coconut flakes. I'm getting hungry. No. So just finding substitutions, like honor your craving. Don't squash it. Don't overdo it. It's just kind of finding that balance, and it takes a little bit of practice. But I learned that at my first job at the health food store when I was 15. I remember my boss was talking to somebody about sugar, and she was like, do you have sugar in your coffee in the morning? This lady said she couldn't quit drinking coffee. And my boss said, do you put sugar in your coffee every morning? And she was like, yeah. And she was like, and milk? And she was like, yeah. She said, okay, just have the coffee without the sugar and the milk tomorrow. And she's like, how is that going to help me quit? She's like, because you don't want the coffee. And that is really, I was like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, it's like mind-blowing.
Like, that was the click for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, you're right. I didn't want the coffee. She's like, I was hungry and I wanted that sugar. So it's just really knowing. You know, you have to know.
Bring in that awareness. And I think it's also recognizing that the craving, the initial sign that you're getting from your body in terms of, like you said, I want the carrot cake, I want the pizza, is just not stopping at that first sign. It's going deeper and maybe just asking a couple more questions. I think something as simple as that. And I think a big thing is awareness, right? I feel like that's a global thing of which could just improve just about anyone's life, is just stopping to reflect and asking them the question. It doesn't matter whether it's cravings or any other situation, but cravings in this sense can be really valuable. And then it can lead you at least to a different answer and not the same outcome that kind of keeps you in this cycle of you. Like you said earlier, you know, it takes so long to build a habit. Like that habit doesn't always have to be positive, right? It can also be a habit that keeps you in a cycle that you don't want to be in as well. So I like that. And that brings me on to another thing that you mentioned. And I'm curious to understand, what is a recovering foodie?
At the restaurant, I think there's a lot of foodies that go to restaurants. People that feel like they need to be a Friday night out at the restaurant, ordering the wine, doing this stuff, and posting about it. And it's part of a show. You know, being a foodie is it's about that lifestyle. It's making food into a lifestyle and not into what it is, which is a nutritive subject. So kind of letting go of your pride about what the status symbol of your prime rib means, and sort of just letting go into embracing like the nutritive side. It's not as sexy. You know, it's not as sexy. You don't see me out every Friday night at the smoothie bar because we don't have a culture for that. But we should, and hopefully we will one day. But I think people's habits and addictions work towards them because it's status quo to go and do that. It's what everyone in the world is doing. But then at the end of the day, they're like, I'm doing, you know, the normal thing, and I hate my body, and I feel like shit, and I have no energy. But this addiction that you don't even realize you have until you see it for what it is. It's like, what is it giving you? I think across the board between everything we just talked about, it's like the identification of looking at yourself for what you're missing. Like, why are you not dealing with what's bothering you? Or what have you not healed that you are needing to go out and drink and needing to eat all this and or to starve yourself because you want to fit those alcohol calories in and then, you know, you're not eating. It's about really looking at your self-care and letting go of the status quo and letting go of the norm and saying, what do I need? What do I need? Like, you're giving it to a child, you know, the child version of you. If you were feeding, what would you feed yourself if you were in charge of yourself when you were little, you know? And nurture that, because maybe you had a really difficult childhood and maybe nobody really, you know, maybe you were given candy and just told, eat whatever you can find in the fridge, and you haven't really ever even considered that food on a whole, on the daily, is just, of course you can enjoy it. I'm not saying don't enjoy your food. That's a real bonus. But just say, you know, food is for eating for 2 weeks. Food is for eating. I'm just going to eat it. I'm going to eat the food. Every time I get an emotion where I want to have a snack or I want to have a sip of wine, this is what I did. This is what I'm teaching. You just stop right there and you say, well, what is it? You know, what is it that's really bothering me? And like, how is that going to fix it? Will it fix it? If I have that bag of chips, am I going to feel better? No. Just, you know, the recovering foodie has to break the habit of that by replacing it with either something that you're not doing in your life that you want to pursue, that maybe you don't believe in yourself. Maybe you want to learn, maybe like that time you're sitting watching TV, mindlessly snacking. Maybe you gave up on yourself, but maybe that's time you could start learning how to play guitar that you've been wanting to do your whole life. People forget how short we have it here. And the great thing about letting go of all of these, you know, I don't go out very often. Do I feel like I'm missing out? No. I mean, I have a music studio in my bedroom. I have paintings all over the place. I have crochet projects. I have a book published. My life is so much richer after I made peace with my emotions and my eating and identifying it. And I have great food. I love everything I eat. But I don't. And it took time and it took these practices that I'm saying, but I don't have to rely on it to make me feel anything other than full.
I like that a lot, because you also mentioned that you still enjoy food. And I think that that's a big misconception a lot of people have, is that when they're first introduced to this idea that food shouldn't only be for pleasure, or it shouldn't be something that you need to eat because it's part of this social setting or the way that you do things in your culture, X, Y, or Z. And it's like, yeah, food is a large part. And of course, you should get pleasure from your food, but it doesn't mean that that is the only thing you're looking for. Or excitement is another one. It's like, well, I need variety because I need, you know, my food to be exciting. Otherwise, I just get bored. And like you said, well, if you actually reflected on that, it's like, well, why are you looking for excitement from food in the first place? It's like, yeah, it can be exciting from time to time. But if you can't find excitement in the simplicity of a meal that's going to be super nutritious for you, why can you only find it in X, Y, or Z? And that has to bring some questions. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, actually, if I remove that excitement and that pleasure, then I'm just going to be left with eating bland and boring foods all the time. But it's not about that. It's about letting go of your previous beliefs of what food means to you and inviting yourself into this new place where I'm the same as you. You know, I eat pretty much more or less the same thing every single day, and I love it. You know, I look forward to all of my meals. I enjoy every single one of my meals, and they don't look anything like, you know, what I would have at a restaurant or what I would order from Uber Eats. And of course I do that from time to time, but my daily meals, I look forward to just as much as I would look forward to a meal out. And I think that that's something that a lot of people would benefit majorly from, because if I think they either believe it's like ordering the pizza, Uber Eats, going out to the restaurant, or super bland and boring. Whereas I think that what we're trying to say here is that there is this beautiful spot in between where you can get the best of both worlds and you genuinely start to enjoy the super nutritious foods and you don't feel like you're missing out that much anymore.
I definitely got my boss, who was not vegan at all, eating vegan like 90% of the time. We're lucky enough to have like a vegan place across the street from the restaurant. I love the restaurant, but I am like so particular about my diet that I do either, I always bring a bagged lunch box of food. But again, like until you're ready to carry around a whole satchel of your whole food for the whole day, not everybody is there where we're at yet. Trying these places can get anybody hooked. Like the food is so good. And then, you know, you have to, like, people think that I eat nothing. People think I eat like a rabbit. There's 30,000 edible fruits and vegetables, and they're eating chicken, steak, turkey, pizza, Chinese food, five things over on repeat. You know, I eat like a queen. It's glorious. I don't know. I think just people don't get it until they get it, and you just have to get a subscription for Daily Harvest. Do you guys have Daily Harvest in the UK?
No, we have something similar. We have like a HelloFresh and all these different type of things. And sometimes they're not the most calorie balanced in the world, but they do introduce you to how you can create more nutritious and enjoyable foods, for example, that are not obviously pizza and fries.
Yeah, so that's all. It's just instead of focusing on a diet plan and, you know, I'm only going to have cabbage soup for a week and I'm going to lose 20 pounds. To start replacing your meals with healthier versions of them until you really find what your body is looking for. And then like you'll be like us, where you just start like on repeat.
Exactly. And I think that usually when people say that they find healthy food unexciting, I either challenge their creativity or their effort. Those are the two things that are usually missing in my eyes. Either you're just not trying hard enough in terms of being creative, or you're not giving enough time, or maybe even sometimes a combination of both. And don't get me wrong, it can be challenging to find that time and the creativity, etc. But that's where you've got to realign your priorities. You know, like if you have time for all these other things, and I'm not saying to do it every single night and create this, this gourmet style, you know, unbelievable dish every single night. But if you do that once or twice a week, and that becomes your new normal, then that recipe becomes easier to make. It can become a repeat. And that's the key to success long term. So I want to transition onto another aspect of your book, is about the lies that we've been told about protein.
Protein.
We usually speak quite, we speak quite favorably about protein usually. So tell me a little bit more about the lies that we're told.
I understand, you know, people don't really revisit their view on food. And when we were kids, they told us we had a food pyramid and it had protein and fat and carbs. And we were taught to, with the exception of Popeye and his spinach, we were told that if you wanted muscles, you had to eat protein. And a lot of us, I think everybody just thought that that protein just went straight to your muscles.
If only, huh?
Yeah, and that the fat, like if you eat too much fat, it would go right to your fat. I think a lot of people still think that. And that's why I wrote this chapter, is because, you know, your body doesn't need protein. It needs amino acids. That's why bodybuilders take BCAAs after they work out, because it's easier for your body to absorb the amino acids when they're not in a protein bond. When you eat protein, your body has to break that down into the individual aminos. And it's taxing on the liver if you're doing something like keto or you're just eating fat and protein and your liver is just like crying for help. And then you're drinking on top of it, which is just going to set all of your chemicals out of balance in a fight to try to rebalance your system. So the thing that people don't realize is that amino acids are in everything that we eat. They're in order for it to have form and be alive, there's amino acids in it. It's just easier for your body to take those amino acids and use them when they're, you know, over 20 grams at a time of protein is, you know, the max your body can digest, I think, within 3 to 4 hours. But if you're eating throughout the day, fruits, vegetables, rice and beans is another thing. People think you have to eat rice and beans at the same time to make it a complete protein. But all that means is that between the rice and the beans, they contain all of the amino acids that your body needs. You don't have to eat them at the same time. You could have the beans yesterday and the rice tonight, and your body is going to use them both to build the muscle when you need it. So I just wanted to clear that up because I see it every single day at the restaurant. It's just people think that they just need to eat the protein. And I'm like, there's more to it. Everything that's in the protein, the cow ate the grass, and that's where they got the aminos from. That's how their muscle was built. They didn't eat a cow. You know, people who eat meat are eating a byproduct. The energy from the sun that gives the plant the structure it is, when we eat that, we're eating the energy from the sun. If you put an animal in between it, you're just eating a degraded version of it. So you should just eat as close to the sun as possible.
Got you.
I think that really opens up a world of food, because between the fear of carbohydrates that people have and thinking that, you know, everything else is fattening, fat, you don't have too much fat, people are like, oh, let's just go for the protein. It's the lowest calories, you know? And the diet fads have made them think that that's what's going to help them lose weight, when really you're just not giving yourself any nutrition. You're just giving yourself amino acids secondhand.
Yeah, and I think it's important that people find this in between, because I still think that there's a huge part of the population globally who still aren't getting enough protein. You know, they're not taking it seriously whatsoever. So there's one set of people who are on one side of the spectrum who have heard all these great things about protein, and yeah, they're then consuming maybe double the amount they need. There's also a large percentage of the population who are still struggling to maybe get 30 to 40 grams of protein in per day, let alone 20 grams in a single meal, for example. So I think it's a big kind of thing of us just trying to find ourselves in the middle of that. Like, if we find that we maybe lean on protein too much, you know, we're consuming a heavy amount on every single meal to make ourselves as satiated as possible, and then not lean into the other foods that we should, then fair enough, maybe a little bit of cutting back. But then on the other side, if we're never getting any protein in, that can be just as disadvantageous as getting too much in almost.
I mean, a tablespoon of hemp seeds has like 9 grams of protein. There are at 6 to 9. It is very easy to get protein if you make someone aware of what alternative sources of protein are. It's very easy to sprinkle 2 tablespoons of hemp seeds into your smoothie and you're good, you know, and you have omegas. I think it's just trying to teach the entire United States and, you know, further a totally different food pyramid than we all grew up on is going to take a lot of word of mouth. And people just don't realize it. They think it's just these 3 categories and try to just stay in the middle lane, you know, so that you have enough calories left over for if you really want something. It's just a cycle that kind of needs to stop.
Yeah. And I think awareness is always going to be the key. And I think that's the big thing I've taken away from our conversation today. It's just questions on questions on questions, and then beginning to not necessarily go down the path that you've always gone down, but beginning to give yourself an opportunity to just say, well, yeah, if I'm feeling a certain way, should I be going with the first initial response that my body asks for, or should I be taking a different path? Or is everything I've been told about fats, carbs, or protein the thing that's actually going to serve me, or is there a different way I can think about things that would actually serve me a little bit better? But Justine, this has been a super fascinating conversation, and I do want to ask you a couple of final questions.
Yeah.
And the first is, what impact do you want to have on the world with the work that you do?
I just would like to help anybody that really thinks that there's something wrong with them, and that's why they can't find change, because it's not you, it's what you've been taught. And it's okay to learn again. I just want to be available, because I was in high school, you know, even the way the media is, still the pressures. I just wish somebody told me that I could just eat right, eat balanced, and have an ideal body and not have to put my body through what I put it through with the yo-yo diets and everything, and this, you know, not eating. So I just want to be there. Because I wish I had somebody that told me, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You just got to go back to basics.
Totally. Yeah, I love that. And where is the best place for people to find you if they want to keep up with the work that you're doing or to read your book?
Always around on Instagram at Justine Bassani. My new website is at weallglowedup.com. And if you're in New Canaan, I'm at Tequila Mockingbird four nights a week. I'm giving away a free autographed copy of my book on my website. So I'm going to be doing that monthly. And the blogs are going to, you know, be free content. I'm trying to start some community chats in there. People can, you know, ask questions so that you don't have to necessarily pay to talk to me or communicate with me. But if you do want to book sessions or buy the book, or look, shop my Amazon finds, that's all on the website.
Amazing. I'll make sure that all that is in the show notes below. But Justine, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an amazing conversation.
Thank you. It was so great to be here. I really appreciate it. I hope we chat again after the exercise book I'm writing.
Sounds perfect.
And that was the Simply Fit podcast. I hope you gained a huge amount of value from today's episode. I feel inspired to improve your health and well-being. Be sure to search for Simply Fit in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcast from. And go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, if you like the episode, please don't forget to give it a 5-star rating. I'd love to hear your feedback or any questions you have. So reach out to me on social media. You'll find me on Facebook and Instagram at Elliot Hassoun. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to talking with you all on the next one.